You're listening to This Week in Fantasy Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Fantasy Baseball. I'm John Coe, joined by my co-host, Patrick Fitzgerald. In this episode, we are going to go over one of Patrick's old articles. Actually, kind of fun fact, this was, I believe, your first appearance on the show when we were going to be talking about your deep league hitters to target article. But yeah, before we get into all that, how are you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing all right. I'm definitely enjoying the playoff baseball. It's cool to see the Mariners having a lot of success. And the Dodgers, on the other hand, are looking pretty unstoppable. They just went up 3-0. So that's been fun. I'm hoping it lasts a while because the Ravens are pretty much the only other team I root for besides the Orioles, and they are not doing so hot. So just enjoying baseball. And yeah, that's pretty much all I got going on. How about you?
Yeah, that's a pretty tough year for Baltimore. I'm doing all right. Hockey season just started last week. Basketball season is about to start this week. So a lot of sports are happening and filling the void of baseball. But we still have a lot of baseball to talk about. Obviously, as you mentioned, the championship series are going on right now. Unfortunately, it looks like the Brewers, I think maybe the death knell might have been Jackson Chourio hurting his hamstring in Game 3. That's going to be a big loss if he's not able to go for Game 4. But this Seattle series in the ALCS with between Seattle and Toronto is shaping out to be a really fun one. I caught most of Game 3 yesterday, and it was fun to see Vladdy just doing Vladdy things and being incredible again.
Yeah, he's having an awesome postseason. Ernie Clement is hitting like 500. There's a lot of unlikely, you know, characters stepping up. So I hope the Mariners get to the World Series just because they never won one before. They're going to have their work cut out for them against the Dodgers, but hopefully be some really good pitching matchups, especially if Brian Wu is, you know, able to get back on the mound and looks pretty sharp.
Yeah, as of right now, as we're recording this, it's top of the third. Seattle's up 1-0. It's a little fun, little old school matchup between Max Scherzer and Luis Castillo pitching. That's pretty fun. And I mean, the Seattle bats look really good as well. I mean, in yesterday's game, it looked like they were pretty much dead in the water. And then they put together a couple fun innings at the end to give a little bit of life to the team. But it ended up being a pretty, you know, still a significant loss, I guess.
Yeah, Raleigh and J-Rod getting it done, and Jorge Polanco is having a lot of good moments. Maybe I should have had him in my hitters after 300 article. He had a great season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously as a Twins fan, love Jorge Polanco, love seeing him do well, so that's exciting. I guess in terms of fantasy baseball news, we are currently in the middle of a mock draft that's kind of being done among all of the Pitcherless podcasts. We'll have more on that in future episodes, but I think I just want to talk about the first round pick because I think we kind of lucked out because we've been kind of saying for the past couple of weeks as we've been doing, you know, draft predictions for 2026 that the top three seem to be, you know, Shohei, Aaron Judge, and Bobby Witt. And in this draft, pick three was Juan Soto. So we were pick four and we ended up lucking into Bobby Witt. But I think that's just an interesting conversation. Do you think Juan Soto is going to become one of those guys that's kind of where it becomes more of a big four rather than a big three in that sort of first round conversation?
I can see it. I mean, the speed that he's shown this year is just, it adds so much to the profile, right? That's not something that we typically bet on from him, but now it seems like he's a 30-30 threat, right, every season. So I can see it. I mean, I think he just offers a tremendous floor now. Like, the batting average might not be incredible, but everything else will be. So I think that Witt will probably still get the nod just because the shortstop and he, you know, super high floor with the average and the steals. So I would expect Witt to go ahead of Soto in most drafts, but I wouldn't be surprised if they do kind of pencil into more of a locked in top four as opposed to just three.
Yeah, I think pick five was, I think it was J-Ram.
Yeah, I feel like maybe it'll be a pretty set top five, honestly, because I do feel like Jose Ramirez gets a lot of love, as he should. Talk about a consistent 30-30 guy. He's your guy right there for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Any surprises for you as you're kind of working through this mock draft on just trends or, you know, guys getting picked maybe earlier or later than they should be?
Yeah, definitely a lot of waiting on catchers for sure. It's interesting. Like, this is a one catcher league that we're doing the mock draft for. So it looks like we didn't have a single catcher go. Like, Cal Raleigh won the second round, and then there was not another catcher till round 10, right? Because everyone's just waiting because we feel really good about the catcher position. So that was interesting to navigate for sure. And yeah, it's just been tough. Like, I'm a big projections guy, so it's hard to draft without any projections. I feel like I'm kind of flying blind to some extent.
Yeah, it's definitely tough, especially because those are usually coming out January, February. And just trying to figure out, yeah, like, what, you know, what is this guy going to do? And, you know, we'll talk about methodology probably in a future podcast, but, you know, I put together some really, I would call them bad projections, but it's just basically taking, you know, PL projections from the last, from last season, combining them with this year's, you know, stats and trying to figure out, like, hey, this player played really good, but his projections were awful. Where do we want to slot him? And so, yeah, I agree. As someone who really, really relies on projections to just to draft in general, it is kind of tough trying to figure out, is this real or is this fake? Just as George, Andrés Giménez just deposits a ball into the seats, right? Like, just with second base being an absolute black hole, is Andrés Giménez that we're going to, well, how do we treat this year from him, and is it going to be real? I don't, those are fun questions that we get to talk about in this offseason. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyways, we are going to be talking about Patrick's article on fantasy baseball hitters to target after pick 300. Part two, I guess you could say, because we did a first version of this back in March, right before the season started. You know, at that point, drafts were pretty much over, but, you know, these are a lot of guys that are available on your waiver wire. We're going to kind of just do a look back into all those guys that were in that article. How'd they do? You know, were these guys that, you know, were worth targeting in deep leagues or just even in regular, you know, 12 teamers, maybe some shallow 15 teamer as well. But before we do all that, just a reminder, you can follow our podcast on Twitter at This Week PL. Send us your fantasy baseball questions to thisweekpl@gmail.com. Lastly, make sure you subscribe to or follow the podcast on whatever streaming platform you listen to. We're on all of them, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Wherever you listen, make sure you follow us and leave a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. All right, we are going to start with a very fun name, Joe Adell. He had 573 plate appearances this season, slash 236, 293, 485 with 112 WRC+, 63 runs, 37 homers, 98 RBI, and 5 stolen bases for the Angels. So, yeah, looking back on Joe Adell, how was that? Obviously, it kind of panned out for some reasons. What did you think about his performance this season?
Yeah, definitely one of the biggest winners among this group was Joe Adell. Like you said, ADP 305, so just outside that top 300. Finished as a 74th hitter and 104th player overall, so awesome power season. Obviously still hurt you in runs and average, but he really broke through from a power perspective. This one, just in looking back in the article, it was a bet on the playing time, right? We know that the Angels are going to give Joe Adell a ton of chances, and he got them again this year after showing some promise last year, but really struggling in the second half. And he really broke out from a power perspective. Like I said, he kept the strikeout rate in check again, 26.4% versus 30.2% for his career. And we're probably seeing his power ceiling here, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, 37 home runs, you know, that's enough to get you among the league leaders. So super impressive year. I'm hoping maybe in the future he'll hit for a little bit better average just because the BABIP was kind of low, but he's not going to have a good on base kind of regardless. He just doesn't walk enough. But yeah, Joe Adell, he showed a really nice kind of just well-rounded, power-heavy type season. I'm sure, you know, people who have been following fantasy and play Dynasty were hoping that we'd get this kind of year from him 2 or 3 years ago, but it's nice that he did get there eventually.
Yeah, do you think it's kind of weird that he only got five stolen bases, though, right? That was kind of the thing about last year was that he went 20-15, and it looked like the last thing to maybe round out the season is, you know, getting that average up when he batted 207. This year, he went on the absolute power binge, you know, set career highs in RBI and runs as well, just because he played more games. But stolen bases down at 5 compared to 15 last year.
Yeah, that was a little surprising. I think if I'm remembering correctly, he might have been dealing with some type of leg or hip injury early on in the season. And I don't know if that factored into it. I think historically, he's also been like a very inefficient base stealer. So maybe the Angels are just putting the brakes on him a little bit. Yeah, it looks like his career, he's 27 for 42 on the bases, right? So not the success rate that you really want to see. So I do think that he's probably more of a 5-8 steal guy going forward, but hopefully he's able to more than make up for it with the power.
Yeah, so not necessarily really a 5 category guy, but you know, three with maybe some, hopefully some growth in average is maybe what we're thinking for Adele next season.
Yeah, and if you find yourself looking in need of a power spec kind of late in your draft, or I guess it won't be super late, but, you know, like after pick 100, I kind of see him maybe in like the Jorge Soler type mold of a year or two ago, someone who has a ton of pop. They might hurt you in batting average, but they do have that, you know, 35 to 40 power home run ceiling.
Yeah, Joe Adell for sure, one of the more interesting movers this season in fantasy. He finished at outfielder 61 last year, so the improvement to be finishing as a 74th hitter is just, really big improvement for Adell. So congratulations to him for the good year.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, second player on the list, Ryan McMahon, third baseman. He had an ADP of 306-307. 586 plate appearances, 214, 312, 381 slash line, resulting in an 86 WRC plus, 62 runs, 20 homers, 53 runs, 3 stolen bases. Of course, the big thing with McMahon was that he got traded in the middle of the season to the Yankees, which unfortunately wasn't really great for him, obviously coming out of Coors, and ended up not doing so hot this season. With McMahon, I think, you know, kind of just looking at the article that we talked about, he did finish the 18th best third baseman last year, and you know, kind of hoping for maybe some more improvement from him being in Coors and things like that. But yeah, ultimately, what was your kind of look at Ryan McMahon, who did get to 20 homers for the sixth year in a row? Good for him. But yeah, overall outlook on McMahon, what'd you feel?
Yeah, this one, you know, it was a consistency kind of low volatility type play that I think, you know, you need to balance out your team sometimes. I do think this one, though, was a slight loss just based on price versus what he returned. He was more like a, you know, 350th to 400th player overall as opposed to the 300 he was picked. Yeah, the average just kind of fell off a cliff. He's been a super consistent 240 to 250 guy, but the strikeouts went up a little bit this year and he just got off to a really bad start. So he was able to salvage, you know, a half decent season. I don't think the trade, you know, tanked his value. I think that he was kind of scuffling in both places. So yeah, I'd say, you know, a slight loss here. Someone who probably now that he's out of Coors, unfortunately, just doesn't need to be on your fantasy radar too much.
Yeah, I'm curious where he ends up next season. I don't think he's under contract. Maybe he is. But even if he is under contract, playing in Yankee Stadium, it just feels like it doesn't feel like he's going to be anything special, I guess, to have on your fantasy teams.
Right. He could hit some homers, but I do think he might be in a platoon. I believe he was, you know, down the stretch and in the playoffs and stuff. So that's not ideal.
Yeah. He did have a very sick catch in the playoffs. So
yeah.
Shout out to him. But unfortunately, probably not going to do much for his fantasy bat. All right. Next name, which probably won't take too long to discuss because he didn't actually play that much. Tyro Estrada, who signed with the Rockies over the offseason, he is going to be a free agent, or I guess he technically has a mutual option in 2026. So he may return to the Rockies. Ultimately, only had 165 plate appearances, was 310 in ADP, 253, 285, 370 slash line, which, you know, not too bad, 66 WRC plus, but again, because he basically played only about a third of the season, only 14 runs, 3 homers, 21 RBI, and 1 stolen base. From Tyro Estrada. So, yeah, I think a lot of the Tyro Estrada hope was because he was going to Colorado, and he might stay there for next year. But any idea on, like, where, if you feel like Estrada should still be kind of in this range of, you know, low 300s, or is he going to be kind of further back in, like, the 350 to 400 range?
Yeah, I think guys who are in this range and then have, you know, lost seasons or really struggle like this, you don't really need to worry about them until they show you otherwise. So, yeah, Estrada, I think he got hit by a pitch in spring training and broke his wrist after this article came out, missed like 2 months, came back for a month or two and wasn't very good and then got hurt again. So basically just a lost season. He's a guy who's, you know, kind of struggling to get back to major league relevancy, honestly. But yeah, I thought he could be successful in kind of the same way that Tyler Freeman was for Colorado this year, who ended up playing kind of that second base type role, who hit for a good average and, you know, just had some chip in power and speed. So it was a venue and a volume play, but obviously didn't end up working out just from a health perspective. And the performance wasn't that great either when he was on the field.
Yeah, I am curious if, you know, the Rockies and Estrada, for that matter, are going to pick up that mutual option right now. second base in terms of middle infielders. They've got Tyler Freeman. I guess Aaron Shunk is a name on those teams. And was it Warming? Was Warming Birdman shortstop? Yeah.
And they have Amador, right? They have Tovar at shortstop, and it looks like Freeman's playing more outfield. So maybe, I mean, who knows with the Rockies, right? It feels like it's not even worth guessing. Hard to predict what they're going to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And regardless of what we guess, that team is just going to be pretty awful. So, I would not rely on Tyra Estrada to be maybe even your starting middle infielder, but there could be some good stuff from him next year if he stays healthy. All right, moving on to another fun name, Trevor Larnach of the Minnesota Twins was 338 in ADP last season. Did have a full year, 567 plate appearances, / 250, 323, 404 for a 102 WRC plus, 62 runs, 17 homers, 14 stolen bases. I'll just say from a Twins perspective, Larnach was fine, nothing particularly special about his season this year. I probably would not have had him on even maybe a 15 team five outfielder league. There's maybe an argument that he could have been in that conversation, but overall, yeah, what were your thoughts on Larnach's season and really kind of his maybe one of his bigger important seasons in terms of showing what he could do over a full slate of games?
Yeah, I think it was a decent season for what you paid outside the top 300. On the Fangraphs auction calculator, he finished as a 250th player, so slight win there. It was interesting how he got there, though. I thought he'd be a lower volume guy because of the platoon, but provide really nice power despite the lower volume. And actually kind of just took a more, he was basically just a league average hitter, right? He had 250, had a 102 WRC plus and 17 homers and 567 plate appearances, like you said. So he did maintain the strikeout gains that I was really encouraged by from 2023 to 2024. The strikeout rate stayed right at 22%, but he just wasn't hitting the ball as hard. The barrel rate dropped. He was hitting the ball on the ground a little bit more, and he wasn't able to get to as much power as a result. And then obviously the Twins offense did struggle a little bit around him. So yeah, I think it was a slight win. I think he's kind of a guy that you keep on your bench or, put in your utility if he's got a lot of righties or something like that. So I think you were decently happy with him on your team, but it wasn't like you got a late round steal or anything like that. So I'd expect him to go in the similar range this coming season.
Yeah, there's even an argument that he gets more playing time this offseason as the Twins kind of slowly bring along their rookies in Walker Jenkins and Emmanuel Rodriguez. Those are kind of the next obvious outfielder replacements to their team. Of course, that just means, though, that Trevor Larnach is batting still as a lefty, right? He's not a switch hitter, so it's like he might be getting more plate appearances, but they might not be high-quality plate appearances. Also, another important thing is Rocco Baldelli no longer being the manager with the Twins. He loved platooning guys. He loved, pulling lefties for righties if the, pitching matchup was against their favor. Don't know what the new manager is going to do, if he's going to kind of be as aggressive as Rocco in terms of pinch hitting. So maybe Larnach does get more plate appearances this season, maybe 50 to 60 more in 2026. But I just don't know if they're going to be high quality play appearances, or it's just going to be more about him against lefties, and it's just not going to, work out very well.
Yeah, definitely the type of guy you hope he's in a premium lineup spot against righties to really be, worth consideration and worth starting.
Yeah. All right, next name. I think this one's kind of fun because we talked about him quite a bit, but I think it was more the fact that he was shuttling back and forth between the injured list. But Luke Raley, who was drafted 323 or 324, 219 plate appearances, / 202, 319, 311, number 91 WRC plus, 23 runs, 4 homers, 19 RBI, and 2 stolen bases. Obviously, not great stats because he just didn't play that much. Any thoughts on Luke Raley for this upcoming season? I know we were kind of excited about him in the sense that he was going to be on the strong side of the platoon and had really decent numbers in the past couple of years. But ultimately, because of injury, that kind of sapped his ability to, put up more meaningful stats.
Yeah, it's a disappointing year. It seemed like he would be a nice late piece with some positional flexibility and a little bit of power speed upside. Just, got hurt, and also his power did take a step back, kind of like Larnach. Less barrels and less pulled fly balls, so he just wasn't really tapping into his power as much. in terms of future outlook, it's really hard to say because the Mariners, I think Naylor and Suarez, right, they're both free agents. So those are kind of guys who would be clogging up some of his positions. So just have to see how it develops. I don't imagine that he'll ever be anything more than a platoon bat, and that's kind of his best case scenario. So yeah, I think he's kind of more of a watchlist guy going into next year. I don't think that he really did enough this year to merit too much draft day consideration, except for, you know, like your draft and hold type formats.
Yeah, maybe a clearer thing is that he's not on the championship series roster. He is in pre-arb, so I think he gets his first year of arbitration, or maybe he's arb eligible this year or this upcoming year. So he'll probably be staying on the Mariners unless they, you know, decide to move on from get another cheap bat, I guess. So he might have some playing time, but yeah, the outlook for him is going to be kind of weird, just because the Mariners are, the roster is going to be a little bit of a flux in deciding what they do with those free agents.
And they make a lot of moves, that's for sure.
Yeah. The next pick is probably maybe the best pick of the article. Hunter Goodman, who actually you didn't write about in your article, right? This was a guy that you mentioned in your appearance on at PitchCon, right?
Yeah, I did a PitchCon panel with Ray Murphy from Baseball HQ and Eric Cross, who has a podcast with Chris Clegg, a Dynasty podcast, and we each did five hitters past pick 300, and Goodman was one of my guys, especially in a two catcher format. So yeah, he was the biggest win for sure. He had a fantastic year.
Yeah, so ADP 346, 579 plate appearances for the Colorado Rockies, 278, 323, 520 slash line with a 118 WRC plus, 73 runs, 31 homers, 91 RBI, one stolen base. Definitely one of the candidates for breakout player of the year. Might have had some. Is he a rookie? I feel like he should be in the conversation for National League Rookie of the Year if he is. Regardless, just a great season from Goodman. What did you like from him, and do you think it's sustainable for next year?
Yeah, I would say parts of it definitely are. The power is legit, right? He was always about a big power bat coming up in terms of his minor league production and also his scouting reports. In terms of that batting average, the 278, I'm pretty skeptical there. He's got a 26% strikeout rate, so he struggles to put the bat on the ball a little bit, even with the favorable home park. The 331 BABIP is high, but probably not unsustainable since he plays in Coors Field for half his games. But I do think he's probably going to project more like a 250 or 260 guy. But if that comes with 30 home runs at the catcher position, you know, that'll take you a long way. So it'll be interesting, you know, comparing him versus someone like Langeliers or Ben Rice, maybe even on draft day. I think I might prefer the other two guys just because they're in better offenses. But, you know, I'll have to see, you know, where I'm at in draft season. But yeah, huge, huge win for Goodman. I was, you know, thinking that his skills would win out and he'd displace Jacob Stallings and anyone else, you know, in his way for playing time. And that was definitely the case.
Yeah, it doesn't appear like he's a rookie. He did have 2 in 24 plate appearances last season. So I think that makes him ineligible for this year. I think what's interesting is that his home away splits are really funky. And the fact that he has 18 homers away and 13 at home. He does have a better average at home in Coors, which makes sense. But it does look like he's maybe one of those few hitters that just isn't as fazed by leaving the friendly confines of Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, the scouting grades on his power, you know, in the minors was like 70 raw power. So, you know, if he's able to tap into that, the ball is going to go no matter where he's, what ballpark he's in.
Yeah, it's a nice luxury to have. And, you know, he should probably be at least top four center, catcher, depending on how you rate Ben Rice. I think that's going to be a very fun conversation come draft season. All right, next is another Seattle Mariner who I think we had some hype on, and then unfortunately he did not even finish out the season in Seattle. But Dylan Moore, basically the utility man, pick 349. He had 243 plate appearances, slash 201, 267, 374 with an 83 WRC plus, 35 runs, 11 homers, 25 RBI, and 14 stolen bases. A lot of hype for Dylan Moore early on, and as he had a really good start to the season. I think just looking at your article, kind of the big thing was just, hey, he's a jack of all trades who can do a lot, had really good steal numbers in 2024. But unfortunately, yeah, it just wasn't good enough for him to be able to even stay on that Mariner roster.
Yeah, it was a really weird season trajectory for him. This one, I think, you know, if you compare the draft day price to the value he returned over the season, it's a clear loss. But if you think about what he gave your team the first couple months before he clearly was not usable anymore, it's a win, right? He had 8 homers and 8 steals through the end of May, which is a great power speed pace. But then he, you know, really just struggled to make contact, and he also fell into a short side platoon role for the Mariners. So I think it became pretty obvious that he was the guy that you cut loose. So, yeah, obviously I think I did expect him to play a little more and obviously not, you know, get DFA in midseason. But I do think that the start was hot enough that hopefully you got a little bit of goodness out of him and then were able to, you know, just kind of cut him loose.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, that's kind of the nice thing about fantasy baseball is that you are tied to one player for the entire season. Maybe you aren't in the specific league that you are, but in most leagues, you aren't. And, one thing we did notice was kind of the revolving door at second and third base for a while for the Mariners before. I think Polanco nailed down that third base spot. And I'm trying to remember who nailed down the second base spot for. Well, it looks like, I guess, Polanco was the second baseman. Oh, yeah, because they traded for Eugenio Suarez. That's right. J.P. Crawford ended up having a really good season. But yeah, it was a team that at first we weren't sure who was going to be playing second base and third base for them, and eventually they solidified that role, and unfortunately that meant that Dylan Moore was the odd man out. But he did finish the season in Texas. I don't know if there's a opportunity for him to, you know, get another shot somewhere else and maybe take advantage of that power and speed tool. But yeah, maybe something to monitor next year, but obviously don't need to keep really too much track on Dylan Moore. All right, next, Pavin Smith, one of those really fun names that we talk about a lot, I feel like, but doesn't actually have any true fantasy relevance. 354 ADP, slash 258, 362, 362, 43, 434 with 123 WRC plus. So, yeah, really solid numbers when he played. 36 runs, 8 homers, 28 RBI, and 2 stolen bases. One big thing here, he did gain first base eligibility. Otherwise, he was an outfielder during drafts. But yeah, Pavin Smith, you know, he was a solid player, but honestly, probably not on too many fantasy radars.
Yeah, I was hoping that he could kind of sustain his, partial season breakout last year. And it looked like he was going to through April. He had a 1.1 OPS and he was in 340 through the end of April. So he got off to a hot start. You know, maybe if you streamed him and rode the hot hand early on, he got some good stuff, but he cooled off and did struggle with some injuries along the way. Definitely a batting line that fits better for real life, as you said, with the you know, well above average WRC plus as opposed to fantasy. He does walk a lot. He doesn't really steal a lot of bases. So he also struck out a lot more than I was expecting. I do think he'll have a decent path to playing time in Arizona next year on the big side of the platoon. But I think that, you know, his batting line is something that's not super useful for fantasy, at least in the long haul. He might have some streaming appeal, though, in like a righty-heavy week, or, you know, Diamondbacks go to Coors Field, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, what definitely helped him in terms of playing time was the fact that, obviously, he was healthy, but Josh Naylor getting traded, him sliding into that first base slot made a lot more sense for this team that has, like, an extremely speedy outfield with, you know, Corbin Carroll. They got Blaze Alexander, Alec Thomas in there. As well as some occasional sightings of Jake the Snake. It's a team that's got a pretty solid outfield. It probably was hard for Pavin Smith to really break into that group of guys. But now that first base is open, and presumably the Diamondbacks are probably not refilling that spot with anyone else right now, as Pavin Smith is ARB eligible this offseason, it does seem like he should be in line to get a good amount of at-bats this upcoming year.
Yeah, definitely a team that, you know, they got some holes to fill in the offseason, so it'll be interesting to see what they do because they have a lot of promising pieces on that roster.
Yeah, and you'll be interested to see where Pavin Smith fits in that puzzle. Next name, Chaz McCormick, outfielder, 360 ADP. Also kind of one of those guys who just lost the ability to hit the ball, unfortunately, and was optioned after a couple months. But 116 plate appearances in the majors, 210, 279, 290 slash line. Yeah, I think that slugging probably tells you everything you need to know. 62 WRC plus, 13 runs, 1 homer, 5 RBI, 2 stolen bases. I mean, looking at what you talked about back in March with Chaz, it was kind of maybe a hoping for a bounce back. He did have a pretty solid 2023, where he had 133 WRC plus with 22 homers and 19 stolen bases. So it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that he could kind of regain some form of life, having a 15-15 season. And unfortunately, though, for him, even though there was a lot of holes in that Astros outfield where they even moved Jose Altuve to the outfield, it did look like McCormick was just ever able to break into that group.
Right. This was mostly a bet on the weakness of the Astros outfield, like you said. But McCormick, yeah, he couldn't take advantage of the opportunities. This is a guy who he went 22-19 in 115 games with a 273 average in 2023. And then he's just been abysmal ever since. You know, it's a guy who probably is not going to be on a major league roster, you know, at spring, or, you know, at the end of spring training this year. He's really fallen off. The strikeouts have gone up, and mostly the power has just completely evaporated. So yeah, this was a shot based on, you know, playing time and hopefully a lack of competition, but he just wasn't able to take advantage. You know, where I'm taking a couple L's to end the episode here, but you know, that's why you look back at your work. You know, these guys are deep shots, and a couple of them really worked out, and a lot of them, you know, didn't. I think that's just kind of the nature of the exercise. So, you know, I'm happy to revisit and learn from the mistakes and also the successes.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, we are ending the pod on two pretty unfortunate players. We're combining these ones because there were two players for the Guardians. Carlos Santana, who signed a huge deal, so I do not fault you at all for making this pick, because I think the Guardians signed him for like $13 million or something like that. And then Brian Rocchio played shortstop for them. Both these guys pretty much just completely off the radar in terms of getting picked in any league, but very interesting dart throws nonetheless. Santana, 474 plate appearances, slacked 219, 308, 325 with an 82 WRC plus. Finished with 49 runs, 11 homers, 54 RBI, and 7 stolen bases. Ultimately was cut by the Guardians, I think in August, just after some really poor showings. And then Rocchio, 383 plate appearances, 233, 290, 340 slash line with a 77 WRC plus. 34 runs, 5 homers, 44 RBI, and 8 stolen bases. And ironically, I would just say that's the season I expected from Rocchio. You know, like single-digit runs and homers is probably what I would have projected for him anyways, and he did exactly that. But, yeah, I mean, obviously, Santana, I don't know if we really want to focus anything on him because I don't think he's coming back next year. But Rocchio, is there any league that it makes sense to even look at him in fantasy next year?
I mean, AL only, I guess, right? You're always looking for guys who are going to play. So I think he has dual middle infield eligibility, so worth knowing, you know, that he's out there. But yeah, he's a former top prospect who, you know, I thought maybe he'd take an offensive step forward this year, and that unfortunately wasn't the case. Seems like he's mostly just going to be a glove first guy. He loves to hit home runs in the playoffs, but obviously that doesn't do too much for us in fantasy, unfortunately.
Yeah, somehow he got one homer this offseason in this postseason for the Guardians in their wild card series, compared to 5, right? So somehow in 3 games he was able to be on pace for a much better homer number than he was in the regular season prior. So yeah, I just don't know if there's a lot to be excited about for Rocchio other than the fact that he does have a roster spot. It does not look like the Guardians are moving off from him anytime soon at shortstop. And yeah, I mean, if you need a warm body, I guess Rocchio can fit that bill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, next year will be his age 25 season, so he's still pretty young, so worth seeing how he does, but not investing anything in for sure.
Yeah. All right, well, that kind of wraps it up for all those hitters. Kind of looking back at these, any sort of like big picture takeaways from this that, you know, could kind of help with drafts in, you know, when you're looking at players past pick 300 next year?
Yeah, I think that playing time is still something I'm going to pay a ton of attention to. Even guys who I didn't cover who were in this range that hit, like Jorge Polanco or Tyler Soderstrom, they, you know, had pretty clear paths to playing time. So that is something that I'm going to continue to prioritize in these breakdowns. And I think, yeah, I think that's kind of my main takeaway for sure. And I guess, you know, I think that the Rockies in the past have been viewed as like a land of opportunity, but I mean, they were so bad this year that I, you know, might just steer clear. Honestly, I had I guess Goodman worked out really well, but obviously McMahon and Tyro Estrada didn't. So, yeah, I think that there can be useful fantasy players on bad teams, right, within a certain extent, right? Like the White Sox, Lenin Sosa was really good this year at times, right? James Wood and CJ Abrams were awesome on the Nats. So I think that, yeah, just it points to these guys who are maybe a little bit off the radar, but every team has got its useful guys. So I think that it's worth keeping tabs on everybody.
Yeah, shout out to Lenin Sosa, by the way, who has somehow made his way into the conversation to be like a fantasy relevant second baseman, which
tells you a little bit about the position.
We talked about him like a couple months ago and just jokingly were like, I don't know why we were talking about this guy, but he did a cool thing this past week. So shout out to him. And I think we both promptly were like, yeah, I don't think you'd even look at him in deep leagues. And now it's like, oh, he might actually be draftable in 12 teamers, which is incredibly scary.
That's the state of the position right now, unfortunately.
It is really rough. We'll definitely talk about how, really, I just think the left side of the infield is just a, well, I guess technically shortstop's fine. So really second base and third base is just absolutely horrendous this upcoming year in drafts, which it feels like it shouldn't be, but oh my goodness, it's awful right now drafting anyone at second and third base, like past round 8, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we're going to have plenty more episodes coming to you guys this off season. We are switching to kind of the every other week schedule, but we will be talking about plenty of other stuff, mock drafts, obviously interviewing other pitcherless writers, just talking about a bunch of baseball in the off season, maybe some recaps on winter meetings and how that might impact drafts. But nonetheless, if you want to just kind of keep abreast of what's going on, you can find us on Twitter at ThisWeekPL. Send us your comments and questions at ThisWeekPLpod@gmail.com. You can find myself on Twitter at TheJohnCa. You can find Patrick at PFitzgerald_99. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to the Pitcherless Podcast feed on Apple, Spotify, YouTube. Wherever you listen to your podcast, leave us a 5-star review if you enjoy the show. We've got content coming out every single week, even though we are in off-season mode. Still plenty of conversation on baseball on those podcast feeds. So definitely check that out if you need a break from all the other sports. And then, of course, lastly, sign up for Pitcherless Pro. By doing so, you can join us on the Pitcherless Discord. Get advice from all the fantasy experts and writers over there. It does slow down a little bit in the offseason, but there's still plenty of drafts going on. I know people are already probably doing drafts on NFBC for next year because, you know, there's sickos like that. Still plenty of baseball talk going throughout the year, so definitely drop into the Discord if you are interested in any of that. That's all for this week. We'll be back next time with another episode of This Week in Fantasy Baseball. For Patrick, I'm John, and we'll see you in the next one. Later, everyone.